From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Daryl C. Murphy. Welcome to Consider This from Boston.
Basically, like, every paragraph in the story took months, in some cases, months of reporting to get to. Like, for instance, we have a line in the story about more than 40 police departments refusing to provide internal investigation records about officers accused of sexual and domestic violence. That took hundreds of records requests that were sent and compiled by my editor, Todd Wallach, and our former fellow, Grace Ferguson.
Last month, WBUR senior reporter Ali Jarmani published an investigation into a Massachusetts law that keeps reports of sexual and domestic violence secret in order to protect survivors. She found that the law wound up being used to protect perpetrators, including police, while creating difficulties for victims seeking recourse. Because of Ali's reporting, Massachusetts lawmakers have vowed to revisit the law. So we caught up with her to hear more about these updates, but first, we asked her about what goes into creating a report like this.
Nobody was talking about this law before we wrote about it. I mean, nobody really thought that there was anything wrong with it. I mean, how does anybody say, oh, this law is designed to protect victims? There's something bad about it. So we really had to painstakingly look at the law from a bunch of different angles. For instance, looking at domestic violence homicides, I wanted to know how many in the state involved previous calls for help to the police. And that was 100 more requests to departments. And then a lot of time calling up family members to ask about their loved ones. And of course, the most important part was finding the survivors themselves to talk to. I spoke to something like 30 advocacy organizations and lawyers who work with people who are victims of these crimes to find out exactly how this law was working or not for their clients, and eventually was put in touch with some people who were willing to share their story with me.
So what have you been hearing since the story published last month?
A lot of surprise and outrage. A number of elected officials we spoke to said it's time to review and make changes to the law. That includes Governor Charlie Baker. He said he'd like to see something before he leaves office in January.
Any chance that would happen?
Probably not, just because of the quirks of the legislature. We're in something called an informal session right now, and the chances of something getting to his desk are pretty slim. We're most likely going to have to wait till January.
Okay. And what about the gubernatorial candidates? I guess this will kind of fall on them, right?
Yeah. So Attorney General Mara Healey, she's the Democrat running for governor. She's long had concerns with the law dating back to when she first ran for AG in 2014. And she says it's time for change.
We now have the benefit of some time with this and study about the effect of the law. And that's why, you know, I'm in the camp of, you know, let's take a hard look at that. And if we need to work with the legislature to make needed changes, let's do it.
And so this may be the one thing her Republican rival Jeff Deal agrees with her on. He says he's open to reviewing the law. And it's not just elected officials. Jane Doe Inc., the state's largest victim advocacy group, says it's pushing for changes. This is after it supported the law when it was expanded to include domestic violence 8 years ago.
Getting this kind of response where, you know, power is moved to take action doesn't happen all the time as a result of a news story, you know? And it's these kind of moments that reporters work toward. How are you feeling right now to see this all happening?
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, I will say. I think it's really great that people in power are talking about this and pledging to take action, but it remains to be seen what they're actually going to do. Will lawmakers remember this in January when they come back for their new legislative session? We'll have to see, and I certainly will be reminding them of it.
What would you say was the most challenging part of reporting this story?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely the investigation journalism side of it. But I think a part that's less talked about is really the emotional side of it. The emotional work that, like, you have to do as a reporter to make sure that you're taking care of the people that you're talking to. You know, I'm asking people to talk to me about the worst thing that's ever happened to them. And in some cases, it's still happening to them. They're still living through the abuse. They're still dealing with their abuser. And some of these survivors, you know, I've been talking to them for a year or more. And then when it comes to publishing the story, you know, I really want to make sure that they're not surprised by anything, that they're prepared. They know exactly what parts of their story are going to be out there. I mean, they, in some cases, people wanted to use their real names, which I wanted to like really make sure that they understand, like from their safety standpoint, would they be okay with that? Do they understand all the consequences? Because you know, it's a big priority for me as a reporter and as a human, you know, not to harm people more than they've already been harmed by what happened to them. And a lot of this stuff is not stuff we learn in journalism school. Like, I don't remember anybody ever talking to me about this kind of stuff. And it's certainly different than the way I was doing this job earlier in my career. And so I just think it's really important for us to talk about it and think about it as we're like doing this work to make sure that we're being human beings first and reporters second.
Mm-hmm. Have you been in touch with any of them since this new update?
Yeah. So I sent them the update this week and spoke to them a little bit. And some are really optimistic, really hopeful that the law will be changed. I just put one of them in touch with an advocacy organization because she wants to make phone calls and reach out to lawmakers to push for action. But, you know, others are still dealing with the trauma of their abuse. One woman that I spoke to is trying to find housing for her and her kids because her abuser was granted parole and he's getting out of prison soon. And so she wants to make sure that she and her family are safe. And when it comes to the law, you know, she's less optimistic about anything changing for people like her. And I can't really blame her. You know, the decisions that people make at the top often have very different consequences for those on the ground floor.
Got it. So, you know, everything you told me, it sounds like, you know, politicians, you know, they see this issue, they're looking into it, but there's no certainty that anything will come from it. What can people do to maybe put some pressure on them to kind of, you know, if I'm sitting at home and I'm listening to this story and I'm moved by it, is there anything that I could do to perhaps to move the needle a little bit?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is, figure out who your state rep and your state senator is. You can reach out to them. You can send them this story. We have a very helpful 9 takeaways from this, so people don't have to read the whole long story and can just see the big things, the big issues that we came up with. And you can send it to them and say, hey, what are you going to do about this law? What are you going to do when the next legislative session starts? Is this a priority for you? So that's number one. Another thing that people can do is look at their city and town, reach out to their police department, reach out to their town council or city council or select board or whatever you have there, and ask about, hey, do we have police officers who have been accused of these crimes and what kind of information do we put out? Because as we said, we found dozens of police departments that were not sharing any information about these kinds of crimes committed by police officers themselves. And I think like the third thing is there's just so many bills that are talked about at the legislative level that have to do with domestic violence and sexual assault that often get very little attention. So you can look up to see what domestic violence and sexual assault bills are being discussed at the legislature level. You can reach out to the lawmakers that are sponsoring those bills and throw your support behind them, because so much happens at the state house that I think just really goes ignored. And if lawmakers know that people are paying attention, they might be a little bit more likely to take some action on them.
Understood. Well, Ali, thank you so much. This has been, you know, super informative, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on what happens on Beacon Hill regarding this issue for sure. So, yeah, thank you for coming through and talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
That's WBUR senior reporter Ali Jarmani. All this week, we're featuring conversations with reporters who contributed to this year's WBUR Maker Series, which features artists of color from in and around Boston. Today, we hear from interim digital arts editor Jen Stanley, who profiled local drag performer and artist Lily Rose Velour.
Did y'all enjoy that tomfoolery? Let me tell you something. Somebody asked me today, what will you get with the Lily Rose Velour number? I said a bunch of craziness, splits, stunts, and tomfoolery. And that's what you just got here. Did you love me?
So the maker that I want to talk about today is Lily Rose Velour. She is a drag performer. She is an artist. She's a Black trans woman and an activist, really trying to bring people together in community to be their authentic selves.
I would say the medium that I feel the most grounded in is really just when I'm performing in front of my community. You know, there's a lot of things that I do, but I never feel nervous when I'm around people who are just like me and were pinned as outcasts.
Lily makes these videos. The tone of them is almost like a diary entry. So some of them are very personal and talk about her experiences as a Black trans woman, how her experience privately really differs from her public persona, and how she tries to show up authentically, but that maybe other people's interpretations of her are different than her authentic self, and that discomfort that she feels because of that discord.
You know, it gets to be very confusing when you're constantly thinking about how you come off to people. Your friends tell you you look gorgeous and feminine, all while you're getting gawks and stares up and down the streets of Boston. It makes me wonder how people truly feel about me.
One thing that's really cool about Lily, as a drag performer in particular, is she is a trans woman, and she's a trans woman performing drag as a woman. And so it's like she's pretending to be who she is in this kind of different realm. But the reason why she really wants people to show up as their authentic selves and tell their stories is because she sees the world, she sees gender and sexuality as maybe a lot more complicated and fluid, and that she just has her own rules for it. I use they, them pronouns, and I think like it's something that I had never thought about when I was younger. These stories weren't out there, nobody talked about it. And now it's just everywhere, right? And you just, I think a lot of people are changing their pronouns or changing the way that they present just because like they're like, oh yeah, that's me. And they're identifying with it and they're able to refine it more. And Lily is just such a trailblazer in that way, I think. And she just really shows up with that authenticity. And I just love that she's showing up in these different facets and encouraging other people to do the same and showing them that like, it doesn't have to be so weird to be weird.
You can find more from this year's Maker Series at WBUR.org. And that's all for today. This episode was produced by Franny Monahan. Our show is mixed by Emily Jankowski, Matt Reed, and Paul Vikas. Our editor is Ben Brock Johnson. And from the newsroom of WBUR, I'm your host, Darryl C. Murphy. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Hey, you're a podcast listener, right? Would you like this show along with all of WBUR's best news stories of the day about Boston and the region all in a podcast feed? I suggest you search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe. You'll be able to find just a local segment of Consider This, plus our best coverage in business, tech, politics, education, and arts and culture, all in one place. Search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe.